from the headlines of UBC's largest campus newspaper, the UBC. Katarina Gurgic and Samantha Jung are in studio this afternoon.
Good day, I'm Samantha Jung for Katarina Gurgic, and this is this week's top stories. Teams of UBC computer science students cleaned up at the 2009 ACM International Collegiate Programming Contest Regionals last Saturday. Three UBC teams took 1st, 10th, and 15th place at a five-hour programming contest on campus. UBC won the regionals in many years past, but were beaten by Berkeley and Stanford last year. UBC's top team, comprised of students Cedric Lin, Simon Suyadi, and Robert Tseng, will now compete in the World Finals in Harbin, China next February.
The federal government is financially supporting UBC's movement to strengthen sustainability research with a $1.5 million investment through Canada's Western Diversification Program. The funding will allow UBC to secure and install innovative and sustainable building systems and technologies for UBC's new Centre for Interactive Research on Sustainability.
Last Thursday, UBC's Ancient Forest Committee, a student initiative under the umbrella of the Student Environment Center, staged a protest outside Premier Gordon Campbell's office on 4th Avenue against policies that allow the logging of old-growth forests in BC. About 15 supporters showed up to the event carrying a large banner and a green cardboard elephant. The group has worked in conjunction with SFU and other colleges and have recently participated in a rally in Victoria that attracted over 500 people.
A team of 10 undergraduate students won a gold medal for their invention, the E. coli traffic light, at the International Genetically Engineered Machines Competition. The competition is held annually at MIT, and it was UBC's first time entering the competition. The E. coli traffic light is a tiny biosensor detector that operates in bacterium that changes color relative to levels of sugar that are added to help the cell grow. At the lowest sugar level, the cell turns green, and at the highest, it turns red.
While their post-secondary funds have seen dramatic cuts in recent years, research funding at UBC has steadily increased for the last 10 years and is still on the rise, increasing by 17% from 2007 to 2008. Thanks to this increase, 7,313 projects were funded in 2008, moving UBC up to third from fourth position for national research funding. UBC administration is upset by Metro Vancouver's proposal that would regulate and restrict the use of academic land on the UBC Vancouver campus. The proposal bites at the heels of the recent passing of Bill 13, which amended the University Act to give post-secondary institutions more governance over their campus. UBC President Stephen Toop expressed his sentiments in a broadcast email to students. In studio today, we have former news editor Justin McElroy of the UBC to talk more about this issue. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Do you want to give me a little bit of background as to why Metro Vancouver is introducing this proposal?
Certainly. Well, UBC is on the lands of Metro Vancouver, and therefore they're entitled to come up with UBC of what the governing structure around the university is. Now, in 1997, an official community plan was set up between UBC and Metro Vancouver that outlined exactly what UBC was allowed to do, how they were allowed to develop, how zoning decisions would be made, and essentially UBC was given carte blanche to do what they wanted with that. And as UBC has started to finalize its campus plan for the next two decades to come, Metro Vancouver has looked at what they're doing and has basically said, we need a little bit more accountability here and a little bit oversight, because what you're doing fundamentally changes how exactly zoning and other development decisions are made on campus.
So why is this causing such a stir for UBC in particular?
Well, as I said, UBC as long as they've been in the business of not just being a small provincial university, but an international research-intensive place that has market housing and commercial aspects on campus, has been allowed to do basically whatever they want with very little oversight from Metro Vancouver or the provincial government. And, it's perfectly understandable from their standpoint that Metro Vancouver trying to come in and saying, we need to have a little bit more discussion over when you change zoning or when you do development or when you build gigantic condominiums. They're going to, react fairly strongly against that. And that was seen in Stephen Toop's letter to the UBC community.
Okay. And what is the next step in the process then?
Well, we're still fairly early on here. What's going to happen is there's going to be a meeting of the Electoral Area A District, which is where UBC is under, in the Metro Vancouver sort of governing sphere. And as well, there's going to be other meetings that determine whether a bylaw actually comes forward, whether there's going to be consultation between UBC and Metro Vancouver to figure out some sort of compromise. But at this point, we can't definitively say what will happen. But what we can say is that this issue of who exactly governs UBC and where is the accountability there has been bubbling for a number of years. And it seems that there may be some actual discussions happening out that will clarify that for the future.
Okay. Thank you, Justin.
Anytime, Sam.
And I'm Samantha Jung for Katarina Gerjic, and we'll see you next week with the UBC's top stories.
Thanks, guys. It's time for a break, but up next we speak to forensic pathologist Dr. John Butt, who's raising concerns about public use of tasers.
CITR's audio text presents a night of spoken word featuring R.C. Wislowski.
Just Google yourself to find you are about 3,833,000 kaleidoscopic diamonds in a worldwide net of gems.
Daniel Mark Patterson.
Your soul, sickened, sear, scorched, sizzle and fizzle as madcap manic metaphors mortify and mold and melt your mind.
Chris Gilpin.
Sweet, noble Sasquatch, come back to me. I won't apologize for the time I called your sister abominable.
Steve Miller.
I like you!
I like you. Oh, no.
Fernando Ruggiero.
His girlfriend brought it up. See, I was trying to go straight, trying to find more dignified, sophisticated subjects for a poem, like a kid picking his nose in an intersection.
Sonia Littlejohn.
Our drumbeat rhythm hearts ignite the souls of embryos and carry life into existence.
And Julie Peters, the host of Audio Text.
Is it any sweeter, is it any hotter, does it really turn me on to see me sorry, to see me stuttering, to see me lose my words before the imminent jury and my human body audience?
Cover is $5 to $10. Pay what you can and support CITR during this fund drive. Join us for this great event on Thursday, November 19th, 9 p.m. at St. Augustine's, 2360 Commercial Drive.
From November 16th to 27th, CITR will be hosting a two-week video game competition. On the main floor of the sub, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., Miss Pac-Man and Galaga will be set up. $2 to play. Highest scores of the day get a limited edition CITR Fun Drive t-shirt. Highest scores at the end of the 2 weeks gets a trip to Las Vegas, courtesy of Travel Cuts. So come and be old school.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
You're listening to News 101. You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. CITR 101.9 FM is currently in the midst of its annual fund drive. CITR is a voice for the economically, socially, and politically disadvantaged. It provides a voice for those who don't have access to media elsewhere. Please donate to help us to continue to provide locally relevant, vibrant, and vital radio. Please call 604-822-8648 or 604-UBC-UNIT or donate online at citr.ca. In 2003, Clayton Wiley was arrested for creating a public disturbance in Prince George, British Columbia. According to the TIE.ca, 45 minutes passed between the time Wiley was picked up by the RCMP and the time an ambulance arrived at the detachment. Wiley died en route to the hospital. In 2004, a coroner's inquest into Wiley's death determined that he died of a cocaine overdose. However, RCMP officials acknowledge he was repeatedly tasered while hogtied at Prince George RCMP detachment. Today, representatives of a leading Aboriginal and civil society group, along with forensic pathologist Dr. John Butt, gathered to demand the release of a security footage taken in the RCMP lockup. We now have Dr. Butt on the line. Dr. Butt, thank you for joining us tonight.
I have nothing.
Dr. Butt? All right, it looks like we're having a few technical difficulties in the studio, but we're going to take a quick break, and hopefully when we come back, we'll have Dr. Butt on the line. You're listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
Brittany! Hit me, baby, one more time. X-Tina! What a girl wants, what a girl needs, whatever makes me happy sets you free. Mariah! CITR, where you'll hear none of those divas. CITR 101.9 FM, where the only divas you're likely to hear are Kathleen.
Suck my left one!
The Amanda.
Hi, this is Janice McKenzie, former CITR DJ and Discorder columnist, and now CITR Board of Directors Chair, and I am definitely going to be pledging during this year's fund drive. I hope you'll do the same. You can call during your favorite show at 604-822-8648 or go online to citr.ca/donate.
Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's two licensed establishments.
Ooh. The Pit Pub and Burger Bar is home of the famous Pit Night. Relax with great prices on cold beer and lots of big screen HD TVs, or chow down on charbroiled burgers, beer battered fish and chips, and Belgian fries. The Pit is open 7 days a week, and Wednesday through Saturday is open late until 2 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
Hey, hey, this is Blaine from The Accused, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And you're back in the studio. My name is Brad, and this is CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. Dr. Butt, do we have you on the line?
Yes, you do.
All right, thank you very much. Sorry about that. So again, we were just saying Dr. Butt is a forensic pathologist who's been consulting with the BCCLA in terms of the tasering death of Clayton Wiley. According to today's press release, the edited video footage seen by yourself, the BCCLA, the UBCIC, and journalist Leonard Claire Cunningham, this video demonstrates how Clayton Wiley's death was actually taser-related. Can you describe for us how the video demonstrated taser use on Clayton Wiley?
Well, let me make something clear here. I don't think that that's necessarily so, that Clayton Wiley was tasered in what's called the push-stun mode of the taser, in which the two electrodes are like in the basically the muzzle of the weapon, that is, at the contact end of the weapon, and that contacts the skin in a diameter of probably that of a quarter or a loony. So that's the only contact that there was. Now, I don't want to get your listeners confused, because the deployment of the taser comes in two modes. One is the push-stun mode, and the other one is in the dart mode, or that which was seen in the Jukansky case. And they're quite different. The one that was used with Clayton Wiley had to do with inflicting of pain. And it's not plain how many times the taser was discharged, but during the course of his sojourn on the second floor of the police station in Prince George, there were two taser weapons in the hands of two members of the RCMP used against him. But you can't obviously see when the thing is discharged. It's not possible to experience it through the video. You know, that being said, the taser was used on Mr. Wiley, but...
And I also have you quoted in the TIE.ca as calling the push-touch stunning of a man who was hogtied and lying on his belly as a, quote, cruel and unnecessary act, end quote.
That's correct. I think it is.
And so are you suggesting that the RCMP officers acted in a questionable manner?
Well, I think that they did act in a questionable manner. A person was on the ground, and he had handcuffs behind his back, and he was roped around his ankles, and then that ankle tie was secured by taking it up through the handcuffs and securing his feet and his legs together so that his legs were significantly immobilized, although apparently he was still able to kick a little bit. But I don't understand how even being on the floor required something to, you know, to control him that was further to what was already there.
Right, and I believe it was one of the representatives of the UBCIC that made a comment that had this been this type of incident been done against an animal, instantly there would have been complaints about animal cruelty.
Well, that was Grand Chief Stuart Phillips made that comment. I don't have anything to add to it.
Okay, so if we go back to the 2004 coroner's inquest into Mr. Wiley's death,
yes,
could the fact that Mr. Wiley was using cocaine when arrested and tasered affect his bodily reaction to being tasered?
That's a very good question. It has been asked many, many times. Over the course of the years, particularly since crack cocaine came into use commonly in the 1980s, there have been a number of restraints employed by law enforcement in particular in order to control the behavior, which has been said to be that of agitated delirium. People that experience this run around, they become hyperthermic, they become extremely agitated, and when they get out in public, they are, to say the least, a problem, a nuisance. And sometimes they do harm to themselves and perhaps even to other people. So they need to be controlled. They bang on windows, smash windows, and that sort of thing. So what I'm saying here is that that over the course of the years, say for 25 years, there has been an issue about how to restrain them, and there have been deaths associated with every type of restraint that's been used, whether that was a neck hold in the beginning or whether it was simply hog ties, or whether it was the capsicum or pepper spray, and now the taser. So every one of these has had fatalities associated with it, and I guess the question is, what is the underlying cause? And as your question indicates, does it have anything to do with the cocaine? And I would say, yes, it probably does. But having said that, there's another cadre of deaths like this that occur in people who are simply mentally ill, and notably those with acute schizophrenia and also with bipolar disorder. And in those cases, sometimes the people have stopped their medication, which was the case in Vancouver about a year or 2 years ago, rather, with the death of a man over on 16th and Granville Street. And he was shot by the Vancouver Police Department. And he had bipolar disorder and had withdrawn his medication. So that's the gambit of the thing, and it's a very serious issue in the community, and it keeps occurring.
And so, are you suggesting, is your involvement in this press release with the BCCLA, are you calling on the public release of the unedited video simply so that we can have a better understanding of what led to Mr. Wiley's death?
Yes, I think that's a good way of putting it. I do think that's important.
And so on that note, it was also said that the original video may be in the custody of the coroner's office as well as the RCMP. So in your expert opinion, can you detail for us what responsibility the coroner's office has in these situations? Do they have a responsibility to release this video?
Well, I think that the coroner's office would default to the people who had the video in the beginning, which was the RCMP. One of the things I noticed in the coroner's verdict was that there's an error in that, in that they said that the RCMP had a video which members were taking at the time. The video cameras were placed in various locations. I think there were a total of at least four cameras that were used, and all of those were cameras that were fixed in some vantage point. One of the comments was made that when Mr. Willie was taken from the back of a police Suburban vehicle. He apparently was pulled out of the vehicle using part of the rope that had been used in the hog tie, and that wasn't available for one to see. And I can confirm that there was no footage at all. Now, why that is, I don't know. Was that because the camera was not in a vantage point that would have shown that on the right-hand side of the vehicle? Or was it because it was edited? But, you know, these things are best left to viewing, and we didn't view that. So one wants to know why. I mean, why wasn't that in the video? Had it been taken out, or was there just no advantage for the camera in that area? And so that's a concern.
And so I had another question in terms of your involvement with this situation. It appears to me upon further investigation that you had been contacted by either BCCLA or the UBCIC for your expert opinion.
I was actually contacted by a journalist.
In this matter,
by a journalist by the name of Leonard Clare Cunningham.
And he was the individual who originally contacted the RCMP and was the first to view the edited video?
We were probably in the first group that reviewed it, yes.
Okay.
He was in touch with the RCMP, both, I think, locally and also in Ottawa.
Right. And his inquiry was simply started in the investigation of deaths within police or within RCMP custody, and this was one of the scenarios that he or one of the situations that he had encountered. And
yes,
upon
yes.
further investigation, he discovered the evidence demonstrating possible links.
Yes, that's. I mean, he's reviewing a number of these cases, and he's having. His problems with getting the information, but this is one area where he did manage to get it, although, you know, what the editing of the tape was and how it was put together is another issue.
Right. Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for that,
and I apologize again about the technical difficulties that
we
experienced.
No, not at all. Okay, thank you.
Have a great day. And you're listening, we're going to take a quick break now, but stay tuned. You are listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Coming up is Weather with Alice Wang.
Vancouver is a diverse city, and that's why CITR is committed to multicultural programming. We feature music from all over the world: Ethiopia, India, France, Africa, Latin America, Russia, Iran, Jamaica, Italy, and Japan. And we don't only broadcast in English.
On diffuse dans un grand nombre de langues.
We broadcast in a number of other languages.
Pour sûr, il y aura une programmation multiculturelle à Vancouver. Supportez CITR maintenant. Appelez au 604-822-8648. 604-UBC-UNIT. Ou donnez en ligne à citr.ca/donate.
Help ensure that there will be multicultural programming in Vancouver. Support CITR now. Call 604-822-8648, 604-UBC-UNIT, or donate securely online at citr.ca/donate.
Right now it's 5:28 and time for the week's weather report, and for that we go to Alice Huang.
Thanks, Brad. Here's your forecast for November 16th to November 20th. If the wet weather doesn't have you chanting, rain, rain, go away, you'll probably be doing that pretty soon. In fact, the rain won't go away for a very long time, not until Friday at the very earliest. It will be one of those wet November weeks where the gray skies and puddles just make the days feel long. A very strong and slow-moving Pineapple Express has been hammering the BC coast with rain and wind. This frontal system will create unstable conditions for almost every day of this week, creating strong winds and quite possibly more hail. Monday evening to the overnight, periods of rain, heavy at times with up to 80 millimeters possible. The overnight low will actually be 11 degrees because of the low-pressure system circulating warmer ocean air onto the mainland. Tuesday, the cold front will pass, so temperatures will actually drop from 11 in the morning to 7 degrees in the afternoon. Tuesday, we'll see frequent showers, a risk of thunder showers, and hail. Winds will gust to around 50 kilometers per hour, tapering off to 30 kilometers by midday. Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a few showers. Winds picking up late in the day and gusting to 60 kilometers per hour, high of 7 degrees. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a few showers, high of 9 degrees. Friday, partly cloudy, risk of showers, and a high of 7 degrees. The long-range forecast shows a pattern of rain and wind for the remaining weeks of November, and temperatures will start to drop, so expect some interesting weather ahead. Currently, it's 8 degrees and lightly raining at YVR. We also have a rainfall warning and a wind warning effect in effect for Metro Vancouver this evening. And also, there's a flood watch in effect for the North Shore Mountains, Coquitlam, Maple Ridge, and Mission. That's your weather for this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. For News 101, I'm Alice Wong.
Thank you very much, Alice Wong, for that. And that's our program for November 16th, 2009. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Brad Pepink, and for the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track on 101.9 FM in CITR.